Oakland-born Damian Lillard.
Now, what a second season for Damian Lillard.
Last year's Rookie of the Year, an All-Star this year. It's Lillard. He got the shot off. Lillard got it! And the Blazers win the series for the first time in 14 years!
This is Damian Lillard from the Portland Trail Blazers, and you're listening to Drive Time Sports with George Buscarino on KOAL 750 AM.
It's time for more basketball talk here on Drive Time Sports. Some big news coming out last week. The 2020 Hall of Fame class was announced, and in my mind, it's the best ever. Tim Duncan, Kevin Garnett, and of course, the late, great Kobe Bryant, a part of this year's 2020 Naismith Hall of Fame class. Joining us right now to talk Hall of Fame classes in general, plus going over the three main names in 2020, we have Jameson Welsh, our NBA analyst. Jameson, it's always a pleasure to get you on. I'm looking forward to today's conversation. Thank you again for the time.
Oh, not a problem. Thanks for having me today. We definitely appreciate it.
I know you share the same sentiment as I do. This is the best Hall of Fame class we've ever seen.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it's the only class that has everyone that, you know, the players have won MVP. And then also, it comes at a time where these guys kind of redefine the game. Like, you look at how the game is played and, how guys were coming into the league and whatnot. I mean, you have Kevin Garnett, who came out of high school. He made it cool for teams to pick a high school kid. Kobe Bryant became the first guard to come out of high school and get selected in the lottery. You know, that's something that wasn't, you know, there's teams at the time, they're like, no way, we're not drafting a guard that's coming out of high school. It just wasn't possible. He made that possible. Then Tim Duncan, he's the guy that he was kind of the last great top 4-year college guy that came in the league. And then, you know, bigs tried to, a lot of the back to the basket bigs, he wanted to try to be like Tim Duncan because he was a guy that could do it all. From that position. So there's a lot of great characteristics for those three guys. But to me, those are the three best guys as a collective to be inducted into the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, there's some great classes outside of this year. Don't get me wrong. I mean, someone would bring up Michael Jordan, David Robinson, and John Stockton. Yeah, that's a terrific class. Don't get me wrong. It is terrific. Jerry West, Oscar Robertson, and Jerry Lucas. Again, that's a terrific class. But as you mentioned just a moment ago, we're talking about three headliners that all three won an MVP, and there's 11 championships between this group, which is astonishing when you think about it. I mean, even going back to the Michael Jordan, David Robinson, John Stockton, we're looking at 7 championships there. There's 11 championships between three guys. It's incredible. And then if you dig even a little deeper, you take a look at how many times Tim Duncan and Kobe Bryant were on a team that represented in the NBA Finals. It's even more mind-boggling, Jameson.
I'll do one better, Jordan. How many all-defensive teams were these guys on? Like, that's what gets left out of the conversation. Like, everyone talks about offense and scoring and whatnot, but the greatest impact a lot of these guys have had in their careers on the other end, the defensive end, especially the two big guys. Like, their defensive prowess is really understated. It doesn't get talked about as much. It's really unfair, especially to a guy like Garnett. Like, Garnett was kind of ahead of his time. Because if he's your center nowadays, when everything's pick and roll and you have to chase guys on the perimeter and hold your own that way, like, he'd probably be the best player in the league just based off of his ability to do everything on the court without, like, hesitation. It would be very difficult to run pick and roll and run your offensive sets with him blowing up everything. And then when he could do an offensive end as well, he'd be a monster. But he's kind of ahead of the time. If he was born 5 years later, he'd probably have a different conversation. But it's amazing, Jordan. You have all three of these guys were stellar defensively as well as offensively, and I think that's the key. That should get mentioned more often because the game, at the end of the day, you got to stop your opponent from scoring, or you have to make it as hard as possible for your opponent to score, and these guys did it for a very long time, and that doesn't get talked about as much.
No, that's a great point. I think Kobe has 9 NBA all-first defensive nods. I believe he had 3 all-second team nods. I think Garnett was actually the same at 9 and 3, and then Duncan was 15 times between all-NBA defensive squad, first and second teams. And you mentioned the big guys, and yes, that absolutely does get overlooked. But I also think the defensive prowess of Kobe Bryant gets overlooked as well. And a lot of this has to do with the fact that we've seen him drop 50 points four consecutive games. We watched him score 35 points a season. He's a two-time scoring champ, right? He's got five championships. He's got one of the most decorated careers that we have seen. We don't talk enough about how good this guy was on the defensive side of the floor as well. There was a time where he was the most elite scorer in the league, and you could have made the argument he was the best perimeter defender in the league as well. You haven't been able to have that conversation with too many people over the last 20, 25 years in the league.
Very, very difficult as a conversation to have. You could argue one of those Heat, I think the second Heat year, that maybe the third Heat year, LeBron was that guy. You can make an argument for Kawhi, but he just doesn't play enough games for most people. So very few people that can have that. Of course, Michael Jordan back in 88, where he averaged 38 and won Defensive Player of the Year. But that's a very select few. Those are four of the best perimeter players ever. I think Kevin Durant is a very good defender, and he has his moments where he's the best defender in the world, but it's not as consistently as you would like. This is a very select group that has that capability, and all those guys we mentioned are going to be first-round Hall of Famers, or already have been. So this is one of those situations where very few are able to get 25, 30 a night, and then really lock in on the other end to stop you. But also remember, think about Kobe defensively. He set the tone for the Olympic team when they played in L.A. That was a huge deal because international basketball is different. It's more physical. The game was played differently. The whole thing, it's a total mind switch. And he was like, you know what? Everybody here can score. Everybody here can score the basketball. I'm going to start this, let's lock up defensively. That's where we're going to win, and that's how they won. They didn't have the greatest of offensive teams, numbers-wise, but they got a lot of steals, got out in transition, got a lot of easy buckets, and that led to everything else.
I'm glad you brought that up, because I've had this conversation on the show multiple times, and I hope people really one day, I hope it's not lost on Kobe's legacy, because Kobe was damn proud of what Team USA had accomplished in 2008. If you go back to 2006, it was not a great time for our international play. And if you talk to Coach Krzyzewski, if you read interviews, if you've read stories from Jerry Colangelo, look, Kobe Bryant is a huge part in where Team USA basketball is today. Without Kobe Bryant, I have no idea what 2008 or 2012 looked like. And I hope that's something that does not get lost on his basketball resume.
Well, 08 for sure. 2012, not so much. I think 2012's team is a little bit better overall, 1 through 12.
But 8 set the stage. 8 set the stage. Without 2008, we don't have 2012.
Yeah, well, it depends. If they lose in 2008, the same guys still come back and try to win it. However, that team in 2012 was, we look back at it like, okay, this team is pretty solid. But no, I get what you're saying. Like, the mindset, it all comes from the mindset and standard that is created, and 08 definitely helped with that. But they weren't, all those guys, him, LeBron, Wade, and the rest of those guys, they weren't going to, during their peak and prime, they weren't going to allow another country to win a gold medal. That just was not going to happen. I don't know what's going to happen going forward. We don't have that guy going forward. There's not that guy that says, you know what, it's on me. Just don't have it. It's not there. It's unfortunate, but that's kind of where we are right now. Just looking at the whole situation, just look at the league. We don't have that one player, that one guy that says, you know what, I'll take this challenge. I don't care. I'm not worried about the publicity or the marketing or whatever. I want this. We don't have that guy right now. That may change by the next Olympics, but as of right now, we don't have that guy.
Again, Jameson Welsh right now, our guest, as we talk about this stellar Hall of Fame class of 2020. Jameson, I brought up the amount of finals, the amount of times that Kobe, and we can throw Kevin Garnett in there and Tim Duncan as well, represented a team in the NBA Finals. KG was in the NBA Finals, it just so happened it was up against Kobe Bryant. He went twice, finishes 1-1. If you go back to 1999, when San Antonio beat the Knicks in five games, from 99 to 2010, all but one NBA Finals had Kobe Bryant or Tim Duncan in it. I mean, that is unbelievable when you put that in perspective. And the only year, it was 2006 with Miami and Dallas. Outside of that, for almost a solid decade, we had Kobe Bryant or Tim Duncan in the NBA Finals.
And the reason why 06 didn't happen is because Ginobili had a really bad foul at the end of the fourth quarter that took the game in overtime. But yeah, like you're exactly correct. And that kind of shows you who ran the decade. I mean, you know, Kobe, especially in the beginning of the decade, when him and Shaq were together, they were impossible to beat. And then, you know, like most teams do, when you have a long run, at the end it gets kind of choppy because, you know, legs are tired. You only have so many games you get up for. Happens to everybody, no matter. I mean, we just saw it happen with the Warriors last year. Like, eventually, no matter how good you are, how good your roster is, you only have so many games in your legs before things go the wrong way. And that's what happened last year. It happened in 03 and 04 with the Lakers. But with that being said, Kobe was able to win two championships with a very interesting group of cast members, because a lot of people like to bring up the good parts of these players, but no one else brings up the flaws. And I love Lamar Odom. I love him like a family member. However, he will have two 20-10 games in a playoff series, and then followed up with like an 8-6 game. And it's like, all right, so what's really going on? So, I mean, I'm not going to downplay any of these guys because they all play their parts, but there was some inconsistent play amongst the supporting cast on that second go-around of getting to the finals three straight times that no one likes to bring up. And it's very unfortunate because Kobe, for a guy that wins that won back-to-back titles, his back-to-backs don't get talked about as much. They really don't. And that's kind of unfortunate.
No, I agree with you. I agree with you 100%. And when you take into perspective how Kobe did it, okay, and again, this is not a knock on Tim Duncan at all. You cannot use this against Tim Duncan. But the fact of the matter is, the San Antonio Spurs were ran a different way. That organization just had a different feel around it. Okay, so what I'm meaning is, Tim Duncan did his damage with the same core. When you take a look at guys, elite players in the NBA, how many have won multiple championships in back-to-back stretches with completely different cores as one of or the best player on the team? That's something I don't think gets enough credit as well, Jameson. So when you bring up that supporting cast that Kobe had in 2009, 2010, let's also look at the fact that that was a completely different cast than what he had at the beginning of that decade. That's important as well.
I'll do you one better, Jordan. What happened to Andrew Bynum 3 years later?
Out of the league.
There you go. What happened to Lamar Odom 3 years later?
Out of the league.
I can go with Shannon Brown, Jordan Farmar, Sasha Vujicic. You get the trend, right?
Yep.
You get the trend, right?
Yep.
You see where this is going, right? And that's how it was. I mean, it's funny that everyone likes to view the positives of players. But you also look at the other way, too. If you're going to analyze the situation, you got to look at the good and the bad. And like I said, everyone wants to argue who's a better player. I'm not a big arguer, especially when it comes to that, because there's no really right or wrong answer. Everyone's got to feel how they feel. But I think that people should consider the full picture before presenting their argument. I'll just put it that way.
Oh, I'm with you. I'm with you 100%. We haven't talked a lot about KG during this stretch, and I also think it's very important that, look, the Boston Celtics are in a position where they're at, even to this day, because of the deal that Danny Ainge pulled, preventing KG from going to the Lakers and bringing him to Boston, right? That particular trade cannot be overlooked as to what it did for the Celtics even to this day and age. Even when Danny Ainge pulled a heist and sent KG out of Boston over to Brooklyn, that day that Ainge pulled the trigger and brought KG to Boston, it was a game changer for now almost, a decade?
So here's the thing with that trade. No one talks about that, but that was a buddy-buddy trade.
It was.
We have Kevin McHale just gifting KG. Like, what? And then if you look at that trade wasn't that good. Like,
nope.
You look back at what was given up, and that trade was really bad when you come to think about it. However, that being said, it is what it is. But I do agree with you that that trade, it saved the Celtics. It saved probably Danny Ainge's job. Because if he doesn't land that trade and they still go young with the draft picks and stuff, he probably end up trading Pierce and he loses his job in a year or two. So you are correct. That trade literally changed the whole NBA because that made the Celtics power, that weakened the Lakers at the time, weakened the Suns, who were in the process of trading for him, or the Warriors at the time, who could have traded for him. So a lot of different things could have happened. And when the Celtics got him, it changed a lot of things. Hell, changed the power shift in the East, because if the Celtics don't get him, the Pistons are still the best team out East. And then you have a young cast team with LeBron out there right on their heels. So there's a lot of stuff going on at that time. But you are correct. That trade really, changed the NBA. It changed the Celtics franchise as a whole on the front end and the back end. Very good point there.
2020 Hall of Fame class. It is epic. It is legendary. And I believe you and I agree it is the best of all time up to this particular time with where we're at right now. Jameson Welsh, NBA analyst. Jameson, it is always a pleasure to get you on the show. Hopefully you're staying safe, and I know we'll have more conversations in the very near future.
Not a problem. Thanks for having me as always. Definitely appreciate it.
Fun conversation on NBA basketball. Again, the 2020 Hall of Fame class with Jameson Welsh. We got a break for just a moment. More Drive Time Sports coming up. We'll close out this Monday edition of the show in just a moment.